Welcome to Back from the Abyss. I'm Dr. Craig Heacock. First, I want to start by letting you all know that I'll be teaching an experiential intensive workshop called Bringing Therapy into Med Management this October in Fort Collins. This will be geared for psychiatric nurse practitioners and PAs, though all psychiatric clinicians are welcome. There are only 20 spots, and the workshop's already about half full, so if you are interested, you might want to register soon. Check out my website with a link in the show notes for details, registration, or further questions. Today's story is a fascinating exploration of psychoanalysis and our evolving understanding of how trauma and dissociation can fragment the unconscious psyche into seemingly autonomous parts. This story explores the mysteries of memory, as well as the role of MDMA in helping people go where they haven't been able to go before. And who better to tell this story but a psychoanalyst with her own rich and complicated story of trauma and dissociation, forgetting and then remembering and trying to make sense of all of it. Jenny, it's really great to be sitting here with you in your apartment in New York City. And listeners, Back from the Abyss has gone on the road, and it's really great to be here visiting my daughter. But I will tell you, it's very likely during this recording that you could hear sirens. We're above an Asian restaurant that Jenny said in a few minutes it's going to start playing pounding morning music,
mm-hmm.
which is the end. There could be dogs, or there could be all sorts of noise, but that just will add to the
sirens.
Sirens, yeah, that will add to the New York City ambiance. And we are not in Fort Collins anymore. So Jenny reached out to me a few months ago, and I coincided my trip to see my daughter to also record this. So thank you for reaching out.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, Jenny, when we approach your story, rather than start chronologically, I was wondering if we could dive in when you started an analysis in your mid-20s. I think that might be a good place for us to start to understand, you know, who you were as a young woman and what you were struggling with and what initially brought you to treatment.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is the first time that I really knew who I was or learned who I was when I started analysis, because I had been in therapy off and on since I was 17. And it was very supportive and helpful, but it wasn't until I got involved with this analyst who I ended up working with for about 15 years that I realized, you know, how I worked. And I didn't know anything about the unconscious, really. It actually led me to my own career as a psychoanalyst.
I mean, my sense is you went to analysis as a 20-something, knowing something was wrong, but having no idea about what lay beneath.
I knew I was depressed and I was having relationship problems, but depression was kind of my way of life, so it didn't seem that unusual to me. I just knew that I needed to get help. I also couldn't work a job full-time. I could only work part-time. So when I first started, I didn't really know what I wanted to get out of it. I just knew I wanted to feel better.
Yeah, how did that unfold? I can think of patients I'm seeing now that show up like, yeah, I don't really know what's wrong, but something's wrong. I can't do what other people do.
Mm-hmm.
So you're realizing you can't work full-time. You know, you're quote-unquote depressed. You are trying to seek help to try to figure out what may lie underneath.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I remember from early on is I had started social work school, and in the summer I was working at a battered women's shelter with children, and I was taking them around every day to different events and parks and zoos and things like that. And I remember there was one little girl who drew a picture for me and gave it to me and told me it was me. And I looked at it, and it was this boxy square person with stripes all over her. Like the clothing had stripes, kind of like a prison outfit. Mm. And she gave it to me. And I was actually really offended because it looked like I was so restrained and so bottled up, but I brought it to to analysis and showed my analyst. And that, I feel like that kind of opened me up to understanding how much my problems were affecting my life, my work, and how obvious it was to a little girl.
to a non-psychiatrically trained young kid. It's like, you are in your own prison.
Yeah, it was really amazing and really did usher me into a much deeper way of working. I think I started going more often. I had only started once a week, then I went twice, and I ended up going 4 or 5 times a week at a certain point. And also, I was in psychoanalytic training, and for training, you have to be in 3 or 4 times a week.
Do you remember how you and your analyst started to explore and unpack, you know, this kind of prison outfit you're wearing, this sort of shut down self that the world was seeing that you were fairly blind to? And what did that process look like?
Well, one thing we did was I started lying down on the couch, which I had never done. It was also very scary for me to do. It had like kind of sexual connotations to me, and it was really frightening. So,
was it a male analyst?
No, it was a female analyst. But what it did for me was I was able to go into my own head without. I was so focused on my analyst. What was her face looking like? What was her tone? I was so focused on her that it was very, very hard for me to get inside myself. So that really helped me. And then going more often really helped me too. Mm-hmm.
Do you think at that point in those early years of analysis, did you realize that trauma was going to turn out to be front and center? That was the reason you were suffering, the reason you were depressed, the reason that you were in analysis in the first place?
Yes, it was very obvious to me that I had a lot of trauma in my life, but I didn't have specific details. I knew that my father was a very like crazy person, and anybody who would have seen him or known him would know that he should not be a parent to 2 little girls. I know my mom was kind of out of it, and so it was clear to me there was a lot of trauma there, but it was clear to me that I had a very strange relationship with my father, very, very intense and intimate. But also, I didn't know why I was so scared of him. So I knew, but I didn't know.
Yeah. Curious. I've never been in analysis, but you know, you're laying on a couch, right? You're not looking at the analyst. So do you think, Jenny, that you were able to begin to access some of what had happened to you more because you'd found, you know, that compassionate, trusting relationship, and or because there was something about, as you said, even like being on a couch, being in that vulnerable position, laying down, and maybe not even looking at the analyst, but being able to sort of free associate and do that psychoanalytic thing?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't have laid down if I didn't completely trust and want to give more to my analyst. I loved her so deeply.
Do you think that was even positionally, that was a part of opening the trust?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Because, again, I've never done that, but I can imagine that just the laying, that's such a vulnerable way to be kind of supine and then not necessarily having to look at the therapist, but just being able to just be saying what comes up and musing. And
oh, yeah.
There's a vulnerable. Certain level of freedom with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So vulnerable, intimate, and it also, I mean, part of why you do it is it does kind of lead you to a kind of regressed place. And I mean, that's what happened to me. I went very, very young. I didn't know what was going to happen. And all I knew was that it was very relaxing. Sometimes I had a blanket, you know, I was really able to just kind of mold into the couch. And And then I went back. I went really deep and to very old places, young places. Mm-hmm. A few things happened. One is that I was in supervision at the time because I was already in psychoanalytic training. And my supervisor suddenly died while I was working with him. So all of a sudden, I wasn't working with him. And for some reason, I had this feeling that I did it or that it was in response to me somehow, which I didn't understand. Another thing that happened was I had a flashback for the first time in a session with my analyst. I was lying down and I started kind of convulsing and moaning. She was a pretty new analyst at the time. I think she might have been in training when I first started with her. She was really freaked out and scared. And she said, what should I do? What can I do? I heard the terror in her voice. So I immediately stopped. But I remembered what I had done. And it was very odd. Like, I didn't know why I was doing that. And then the last thing was that I think this was all around the same time. I wasn't able to talk for several sessions. I kept trying to talk and I couldn't. And finally I said, maybe I could draw it. And she said, okay, so draw it. She gave me a piece of paper and a pen. And I drew a smiley face and a torso. Just two things, a smiley face and a torso, but they were separate. It was in a very childlike drawing. It was a childlike drawing. I had no idea what that was, but truly all of a sudden, and it's weird what triggers certain things. I don't know why, but all of a sudden it was like I opened a cellar door and inside that door were all of these parts of me that had been kept hidden for a really long time. And it was like, they said, okay, it's time. We can come out now. It's all right. We can come out. She's let us out. I started getting to know. It was like roll call. Like people were coming out and saying, I'm this person. I'm that person. It was kind of terrifying, but also kind of exciting because I felt like more myself.
Mm-hmm. Is this all happening in analysis? Like in your sessions?
This was happening in sessions and out of sessions.
Wow, it's like the portal had been opened and just here it comes.
It was totally like a portal. I started trying to organize it. I'm a very organized person, so I tried to organize it and put it down. Like, okay, who's this? What is this person? You know, what does this person represent? What memory does this person have? What feeling? Like, I had very little splintery type of people. Like, this is the person that's jealous all the time. Or this is the little baby that's crying all the time. I had one named Bonnie that was very, very connected to my therapist. Whenever my therapist went away, would be crying. Her name is Bonnie from the song My Bonnie Lies Over the Ocean. And I think a lot of my people came from songs and TV shows. And it's a very weird experience to like know these people, but also not know them. And also that they're people and that they have actual names. It's very, very weird because I don't know how they got names. It's not like I don't think I ever kind of became them as far as I know, but I knew about them.
Did you understand them then as trauma parts of you?
Yeah.
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 And how far into psychoanalysis was this? I mean, did this take years for this to break open when you did that drawing?
Yeah, it took about five years, probably. Yeah. 5 or 6 years.
I'm imagining that this could have felt, I don't know, hopeful or like progress being made or... oh, wow, we are doing something. But then I also could imagine this could feel totally destabilizing, like we've just drilled down a little too deep and now everything is just starting to come unraveled.
Yeah. I mean, the best part was that my therapist / analyst, now I'm going to call her my therapist, she was so available to me. She let me call. I would leave her messages and she'd call me back. I'd write, this was before email and texting and stuff like that. So I would write her notes and I would call her and leave her messages. And she was always there for me, which was, and sometimes I would call her and leave her messages like 5-6 times a day, just little ones, just like, I'm having a really hard time. I just need you to know that. And she just leave me a message saying, I hear you, or I'm here. So it helped me get through it. I also think of my life in sections of who was my analyst at the time. So this first analyst for about 15 years, we did a lot of tremendous work. That's when I realized that I dissociated. That's when I remembered a lot of childhood sexual abuse that I thought only my sister had been sexually abused. And so somehow it had come out through this work that I had been by my mother's boyfriend. So that all sort of happened through that analysis. Then, I mean, interestingly, what happened was September 11th happened, 2001. I was here in New York, witnessed the towers falling. I think that experience kind of scared me and closed me down. And then I got pregnant. And that also, it was at that point where I just was like, I have to be a good mom. And I want to be very whole and I want to be very stable for my kid. And so there was a period of about, I'd say 15 years of my child's life where I didn't think about myself as someone who dissociated. I wasn't doing a lot of trauma work. I was just building a career and I got separated from my partner at the time. And, you know, so it was a lot of life stuff. And so not a lot of internal digging. Then I would say it wasn't until my father died in 2017, and I started with another analyst, that the whole other part of my life, and that's also when MDMA came into the picture, mm-hmm. happened. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, help me understand that. So was it that your new analyst, this is a man?
Female.
A woman, okay. Mm-hmm. Did she see something in you, in the way maybe your dissociation manifested or something with your story, or was she just sort of a big fan of MDMA? But what was it that made her say, Jenny, I think you need to look into this?
Actually, she didn't.
Oh.
I brought it to her.
Ah.
She had absolutely no knowledge of it. I think probably at first she was a little bit nervous about it. And then she did her research and said that she had heard that it might be a good thing for me, but I did all the information getting. I found myself some therapists to do the MDMA work with underground.
So let's turn that question back on you. So yeah. What made you, again, you've done so much work yourself. You trained as a psychoanalyst and then something made you think I need to go deeper with, you know, in a way I haven't been able to before.
Yeah, it was because that depression was not lifting. It was still there, even though my life was looking really good. Everything was going well. I was in a good relationship. My kid was doing well, and my practice was doing well. And I couldn't appreciate the stuff that I had that was really good. And I was having these bouts of depression that just really, I wouldn't say debilitated me, like I couldn't function, but debilitated me, like I kind of wanted to isolate, and I didn't want to hang out with people.
Do you think even then you understood those, again, as sequelae of trauma, that despite all the trauma work you'd done with your analysts, you know, years and years and years on the couch, and yet you're still having such terrible episodes? Do you think you thought this is trauma fueled, or did you think I'm a depressed person?
That's what I thought. I thought this is me. Mm. And unfortunately, I mean, from my trauma, this is what I'm made of now. Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially after my father died, I had this, it was like a nibbling, I don't know the word, but something that against my head saying, get deeper. You know, there's something more there. And as I was exploring that, I felt like there was it was almost like an encased egg of an experience that I couldn't break into. It was like hard plastic. And no matter what I did, there were dreams that were kind of trying to say, there's something there. But then I'd have all these fire dreams that would say, get out of there. And so I'd stop getting hints. It was like I was on this fact-finding mission all of a sudden, and I couldn't get in. Mm-hmm.
And just to summarize, you knew pre-MDMA that you had a history of sexual abuse.
With my mother's boyfriend.
Okay. So you knew that there was at least one incident that could explain at least some part of your trauma.
Yeah, that was that whole first episode of analysis was about that experience for the most part.
So let's move into the MDMA sessions. How many did you do?
I did five.
Five, okay. Run us through those. And I guess I'm sure that could be a 25-hour podcast, but maybe some of the highlights, challenges, surprises, you know, what unfolded, not just in the sessions, but between the sessions and integration, and you know, what that process looked like for you.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I was really, really scared. And so for the first three sessions, I would say I was fighting the medicine tooth and nail. I was fighting. So it was very hard for me to let myself surrender to it.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what you were doing? Eyes open or eye shades? What did that
look? I could not close my eyes.
Mm-hmm. You couldn't let yourself go.
I could not lie down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I had to sit up. I had to look at my therapist. I had to talk nonstop. Mm. And they would suggest, you know, very gently suggesting, you know, maybe you want to lie down. And
so you had two. Did you have male, female?
Yeah, I decided I really needed two people. Because, you know, I had this experience, but I knew somehow that they might need each other, mm-hmm. and that I might need them to be taking care of each other, mm-hmm. instead of me taking care of them.
That says a lot about the level of fear and hypervigilance and dread. I mean, there you are, like you brought yourself to MDMA assisted therapy, and those first sessions, your eyes open, and you said, "Tuck, tuck, tuck," at the therapist. But again, part of you knowing—I mean, you're a psychoanalyst. Part of you knowing, I got to go in, mm-hmm. but you just could not do that.
Mm-mm. Nope. But the first session was—it felt like it was a laying out in a timeline of my traumas. So the whole 8 hours was actually from. I don't know if it was from beginning to end, but it was very much one lifetime with all of my experiences. And it was the first time, even though I had been in a lot of analysis, even though I had done a lot of work on myself, it was the first time that myself and all of me could see my life in full. And so that was amazing, very overwhelming. And I knew it was overwhelming because my therapist looked exhausted. Not only exhausted, but they said things to me like, oh my God, you know, that's the worst things I've ever heard of. You know, like too much, too much, too much. So
you felt like too much for them.
I did. So then, yes, second session, third session, I was worried. I was wishing that my analyst that I was doing the integration work with, I was wishing that she was the one that I could do the MDMA work with, but she didn't do that work. And so I just had to do the integration work with her. But yeah, I held back because I was worried about them. Mm. I mean, that might have been an excuse too, but.
Yeah. I wonder if they knew that. Obviously, hopefully they knew that they were overwhelmed, but I wonder like if they ever hear this, they could think, oh yeah, Jenny's right. Like, we were in over our head with her.
I don't know. I don't think I said that to them, but you know, over time and over the subsequent sessions, I was giving a lot more direction. I kept giving more and more direction to them. Like I was telling one therapist, could you not talk as much? Because it's very hard for me to get into my head, period. But when you're talking, I can't hear myself think. Mm. So I did a lot of directing, and by the end, they were able to really provide what I needed, which was mostly just hold the space for me, mm-hmm. and listen to me.
Yeah. So is that how you were able to move from those first three sessions where your eyes open, you're talking, you don't even feel safe enough to go in, that you started directing them like, okay, if this is going to work for me, here's what we all need to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's how it went. The first session was just kind of laying it out. Second session, they were able to get me to lie down with the eye shades on, and I immediately went deep into the memory that I was actually trying to get to without knowing it, but was terrified, so came back out. Third session, I don't remember very much because right afterwards was lockdown from the pandemic. It was like a week before New York City closed everything down. So that took precedence to my session. So I really don't remember very much of that session. And it took a whole year before we were able to get to the fourth session. That was a very hard year for me because I thought, because of the pandemic, I thought I wasn't ever going to get to it.
Mm-hmm. Were you doing any kind of integration or get-togethers during
that time? I had my therapist. Mm-hmm. I had virtual sessions. Mm-hmm. So I was doing all that work, but I really knew that I needed to do more.
Do you have a sense, and I guess this may be unknowable, if maybe you needed a big break away from it to come back? Like if there had been no lockdown, no pandemic, and you had just marched ahead to session 4 and 5, that you would have been too defended, protectors standing strong, versus you actually stepping away and taking a big break and sort of resourcing and then coming back?
Maybe. I mean, all of them were, except for the first two, all of them were about a year apart. Mm. So I did need about a year in between each session to integrate them as much as I could. And so then the fourth session, knew that a bunch of things were different. One was I wanted my cat with me. So I asked if we could do it in my home. And my therapist agreed to that, which was really, really wonderful. I also wanted to record the session, which I hadn't done the first three.
Video or audio?
Audio. Mm-hmm. My therapist would write down notes for me, but the fourth one, I just wanted full recording. Again, I was fighting the medicine. And my therapist, a big part of their work with me was just helping me allow the medicine to do its work and allow me to trust the medicine, which I didn't trust anything except myself. So I was afraid to let myself go. And so one of the phrases that we came to was, let it be. And then we all agreed at the same time, let's listen to Let It Be, the Beatles' Let It Be. So we played that, and that took me into this memory that that I had closed up for about 50 years. And I don't know how much to say about it, but
I think you should say what you feel comfortable with. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe at least give us the outlines of it, you know.
Well, it was like I learned through images, but what had happened. But what is wonderful about MDMA assisted therapy for me was that it allowed me to put my fear to the side, so that I could see what it was that I needed to see. Because otherwise, I wouldn't have looked at it because it was too awful. And what it was that I witnessed a very gruesome murder when I was six that my father did and had me take part in. It came back to me in images like of this girl with her eyes staring at me, you know, almost like cartoon with the eyes coming towards you in terror. And I had, through the whole 8-hour session, it would like come back around, like different parts of that memory. And it was like a whirlpool of coming back around. Like I'd get one part of the memory and then go out and then go back in and go get another part of the memory. And so it took me through the whole, the murder and then what ended up happening, where my father brought the body and I went with him and he ended up leaving me there in the hole that he put the body in. I mean, it sounds like a movie or a horror film or something, which is why for about a year, after remembering all of that, I kept going back and forth, like, is this something I saw?
Yeah, that was my question is, as this was unfolding, I wonder if you remember, if you were thinking, I'm recovering this really vivid thing that happened, or the medicine is trying to show me in this unbelievably awful, powerful metaphor something.
Yeah.
Because you know, psychedelics can speak in metaphor and they can take us back to quote unquote truth.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what I'm so curious, like how you work through that and with a therapist.
I definitely was very hopeful that it was all metaphor. And I thought maybe it was a killing of myself as a child, because of the abuse. Maybe I saw a movie and I'm putting it on top of some of the things that happened. My father was a filmmaker. He had props, and maybe I just put all these props together because she was placed on a pretend electric chair. He was doing a screen test. Or pretending to do a screen text that was the way that he got the girl in. So I really wanted it to be metaphor, but I kept coming back to the very specific images and sounds and smells, and they never went away, you know, and they never changed. And I kept trying to make them go away.
It's like once you saw that, you couldn't unsee it.
I couldn't unsee it.
It was now uncovered forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember, and that's, I assume you were talking about in that session with your therapist, with the MDMA therapist, do you remember their reaction? I'm guessing, I mean, because you had already said that you thought maybe you were overwhelming to them, and now session four come back after the pandemic, and now this comes up.
Yeah, one interesting thing, because yes, they were pretty horrified. They told me later, you know, that they looked at each other, but it made sense because it was like I was laying down clues for the first three sessions. Like there were little bits of it. Like there was the hole that I was put in, which I guess was kind of the grave or something. In the second session, there was all these different separate pieces that were coming to a head for the fourth session. And one thing that one of the therapists said, she's like, "Oh my God, all your artwork in your home makes so much sense now." And I don't know, you could look around my home and see, but there's a lot of cut off in my bathroom, you'll see cut off torsos and separate, like, I have a lot of art with a girl's face with like flowers growing out of it and like growth from the earth. And then we looked back at my drawings, because I also brought a pad of paper if I wanted to draw, and we looked back at some old drawings, and there it was, like this cut off torso, and like it was really weird to go back with them and look at all the, it was like I was trying to tell myself what I didn't know, what I knew.
So the therapist, it sounds like they fairly quickly we're putting the pieces together, as you said, kind of the tracks you laid down, and they are thinking, yeah, this is actually like bona fide recovered memory, not MDMA speaking.
Well, I asked them, I said, could I be making this up? And they said, well, what do you think? And I said, why would I do that? Mm-hmm. Like, it makes so much sense why I was so terrified all the time of my father. I didn't let him meet my son ever. I stopped talking to him for about 30 years till he died. I was afraid like he would come around any corner like and tell me to shut up. You know, it was a secret that we kept. My sister, when I finally told her about it, she said, oh, because she had a very different experience of my father, not terrified of him. She had a lot of abuse from him, but not the same kind of terror. And she said, now I understand why whenever he came into town, you would go into hiding. Why you kept me from him. You know, all these reasons why, like I was afraid that he would kill her. I was afraid he would kill me, you know. And when that night ended and I got myself back to the house, the memory just closed. And I didn't remember it at all until that MDMA session. Mm. Even though if I go back to my journals and drawings and stuff, it's all there.
Yeah.
It's really bizarre.
And so then you had integration after that, and then one final MDMA session.
Yeah.
Yeah. How, talk about an integration challenge. I'm just imagining three of you working with that and then trying to process that, and then even the plan what we're going to go in one more time.
I didn't go in another time for another year, and I luckily, after the fourth session, had planned a virtual session with my actual analyst to do the integration. So I was just coming down off of the medication, and I told her about it then. Then spent the rest of the year integrating that. It made me feel crazy. I really thought that I might be going crazy, and I was really scared, depressed, but I also realized, I remember saying to my therapist, because there was a lot of extra sessions, extra phone calls, extra emails, all that. I remember writing to her, I finally make sense to myself, which is really what made me know that it was an actual experience. Mm-hmm. And this is just like kind of the big trauma, but there's, of course, with mm-hmm. big trauma, there's all these other things around it. But it was like, it felt like a deck of cards shuffling into place.
Yeah. And again, I can imagine such a terrible, confusing mix of emotions, like, aha, like this makes sense. Finally, I get it. Now I know why I've suffered so much. And also the horror of having those cards all put in a row and looking back, and I actually went through that.
Yeah, and it gave me some compassion for myself, yeah. Which is what the fifth session was, that I spent a long time in that session with my hand over my heart, patting myself and saying how grateful I am that I was such a good mother to myself. Because I, closed that up, closed all of that up for the most part, and lived my life and didn't hurt anybody and actually even tried to help people, and that I did a pretty good job. Like I didn't fall apart. So that was a really nice part of the last session. And that's how I knew that was probably the last session I needed. It was like a confirmation for me of my good work.
I'm wondering, in the 2 years since then, what brought you into analysis and then to MDMA work was just, as you said, this crippling, persistent depression. And what has that looked like over the last couple of years since you did your MDMA work?
I have an explanation for how hard my life was growing up and why I was always so depressed, even though everything else was okay.
I can imagine, too, that while there still very well may be symptoms of depression or episodes, that the not just your interpretation of them has changed, understanding them, but maybe the quality has changed. Because again, if I had a crystal ball, I wouldn't have expected that depressive stuff would all go away just because of these insights and the integration, but that it may have shifted both quantitatively and qualitatively in a way that, again, not just makes more sense, but is more manageable and doesn't feel like it's a front and center thing boiling over your life, but more like something that's there that can start to boil over, but mostly is kind of on the back burner simmering.
Yes. The hardest thing for me about all of this was that I was part of this event, that I brought the girl down the stairs knowing what was going to happen to her. And so I've felt like a criminal my whole life. but to know why. So, and that's not resolved, because my therapist helped me tell authorities about what happened, and they took me seriously. They believed me. It was a really healing experience, and they went and they did a search to where I thought maybe the hole was, or the grave. They didn't find anything, but it was a huge park. So I was hoping, and hoping to find something, but also hoping not to find something. But that has not been resolved for me, that feeling, like, who was that, and the guilt and all of that. The other thing is that, yeah, the depression kind of is around sometimes. It's definitely not ever as deep as it had gotten before. But the main thing that I feel like has changed is that I can make connections with people in a way that I never used to be able to, because I couldn't connect with people before, because I thought my connection was dangerous. So I would stay disconnected. Also, if I connected to myself or connected to somebody else, then I might really know stuff that was kept hidden from me. So I stayed on the edge of myself so much of my life. But now I can actually love people in the deepest way that I feel. I've always felt deep love, but I've not been able to express it or let other people know as much as I feel it. I've protected them from me. Mm-hmm. You know, so that is different, and that's really amazing.
Yeah. Well, speaking of trust and connection, you reached out to me, and I mean, ultimately, you invited me to come here and meet you in your apartment in New York City. We just met minutes ago, and we've talked a lot on the phone and email, but here I am, and it's like we're just a few feet apart, and we're looking at each other, and it feels really vulnerable and trusting. So this seems like in vivo evidence that something's really shifted. I wanted to wrap up with a couple topics which are related, and I'd love to hear your perspective, Jenny, both as someone who's been through this, but also as a psychoanalyst. And that is, I'm wondering what you've learned about the nature of memory and the nature of dissociation, both as someone who's been deep in those for your whole life, and also someone who works in the field and with people who are traumatized and are trying to make sense of their memories and their dissociation. And again, I know those topics tie together, but I wonder if we just might wrap up with those.
Well, what I really want to say is that the mind is amazing. I think dissociation is really, really helpful for trauma.
It's and a cool trick.
It's amazing. And that memory is so context specific and emotion specific that it's not easy to remember things just on demand. I mean, that's why MDMA helped me, because I think we have a lot of parts to us that protect us from knowing what we don't want to know.
Did the MDMA sessions change qualitatively, quantitatively, how you experience dissociation since? I mean, do you spend less time dissociated? Are you less likely to dissociate? Or do you feel like...
Yes.
And was that the special sauce, those sessions that allowed those, you know, kind of the protector of dissociation to kind of move back and play second fiddle.
Yeah, because the protectors didn't have as much of a job anymore because I was knowing what they were trying to get me to not know. So I don't have to dissociate in the same way because I know my whole self.
Mm-hmm. You know, if you were to talk to your clients or friends or colleagues who are considering doing MDMA-assisted therapy, I mean, what would be your words of wisdom or warning? Or
yeah, there are a couple of things. I mean, the first one is that all parts of you need to be on board, and that's a hard thing to accomplish, but I think, you know, the therapist needs to really make sure that every part is wanting to go in to the MDMA session. Otherwise, you're going to have a lot of fighting. Although, you know, I had a lot of fighting and it was okay because we worked with that. So there's that. The other thing is, what I didn't know was coming off of a session can be very, very hard, not only because what you've done or learned, but also because there's a deep depression, or at least for me, there was very deep low because of the serotonin issues. So it was shocking to me how low I got.
Were you on meds during that time?
Yes. So I had to go off my meds beforehand.
Oh, so double whammy.
Double whammy.
Do you remember what you were taking?
I was just taking Wellbutrin.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had a couple of weeks to go off of that. And then...
Which is interesting. I wouldn't necessarily counsel someone to go off Wellbutrin for MDMA anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. Nobody really was counseling me, unfortunately. It was just me doing it. But after a couple of experiences of that, I knew what was going to happen, and so I was ready for it. And I went right back on my medication as soon as possible. Mm-hmm.
And how has all of this informed your work now, kind of pre and post, in your work as an analyst?
Oh, I'm so excited about this work. I so want to bring it to certain people in my work and in my practice, and hope it is legalized and is available to people who could really, really use it. I'm not an advertisement for this kind of treatment, but I do believe that it can really help a lot of people, along with psychoanalysis, because it's kind of similar. I mean, if you're in psychoanalysis 5 times a week, it works the same way, but people don't have the resources or the time to do that, and this is helpful for that.
I would just like to clarify that when you said I'm not an announcement for it. I would say, Jenny, and this is why I was really excited to record this. I think you are a genuine story of what can happen with MDMA-assisted therapy, which is that some powerful things can shift. Do you still suffer? Yes, there's a lot of guilt, and you know, there were tears in your eyes pretty much through these last 20 minutes. But are things better? Yes. Have you moved to a better place? Yes. So, yeah, maybe not the 30-second national commercial home run, like, hi, MDMA saved my life, call 1-800. No. But again, a real story with real tears and real movement, and beautiful. Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that.
Thank you.
And I just want to say here, it's been an auspicious recording because the boom, boom, boom that you warned me that happens at like 11 a.m. in the Asian restaurant right below us. It's not started yet.
Because it's before 11.
Right, we're going to wrap this up right before 11. And right as I hit stop, it's going to go boom, 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 boom. And then we can have a little dance party up here. Well, thank you again for inviting me into your home.
Thank you.
I think Jenny's ability to make sense of the terrible lifelong dread of her father, the revelation of why she'd always felt like a criminal, her newfound ability to connect to others, these all argue for her having accessed something totally profound in those MDMA sessions. I loved hearing about the power of first being validated and believed by her analyst, and then eventually by law enforcement. Because trauma survivors need safety for sure, but even before that, they need to be heard and believed. And finally, Jenny mentioned the quote-unquote deep depression that followed each MDMA session. I discussed this phenomenon in my most recent solo episode, this idea that coming off meds for MDMA-assisted therapy can put people at significant risk of a post-session depressive spiral. Fortunately, Jenny was able to work through this, but I think, again, it should serve as a warning that MDMA work is not without significant risks.